Thank you, Chair. I'm going to attempt to answer most of the questions, and the ones that I've left out, the rest of the Commission would answer. There's also questions that are quite specific to the department that I'll allow the DDG to talk to. First, let me correct, and I think I might have been misunderstood in terms of the one thing. We're saying that there's a decrease of the white population by 1 percentage point per year. Okay, so if we look at from 1998, we would say there's been a decrease by 1%, 1998, 1999, and it keeps going down like that. Obviously, it's still not satisfactory, and it is slow. There is transformation, but we're generally saying that it is at a very slow pace. I also want to talk to you the issue of the compliance certificate. There was a question, will these certificates be accurate and will they not be fronted? So in terms of that, one of the things that I didn't mention is how we envisage the operationalization of the certificate. Our system itself will generate the certificate. So we are trying to streamline everything such that when an employer reports, all the information is loaded on there and the different systems talk to each other in terms of issues such as CCMA and the rate, such that by the end of the reporting, an employer should be able to get a report that is generated by the system itself. Is it possible that the information that is fed in there could be inaccurate? Yes, it's possible. So the certificate will be issued, but that's where the inspectors then play a role. We said that we will give them a list of all compliant employers, and when they go in, then they would interrogate and verify the accuracy of the information that we have received that is on the system. There was a question on why not 100% towards designated groups, and the answer is that the Act is very specific that we should reflect the country. And therefore our statistics should really talk to the representativity of the EAP and not necessarily lean more towards the one side at the expense of others. I also want to talk very briefly to the term of the Commission. So how we are appointed into the Commission, if I can just start there, is that the different partners at NEDLAC would nominate people to sit on the commission. And the criteria is based on representativity as well as expertise in the field of employment equity. So all of us are experts in our own right in this space, and the nominations would then go to the minister and the minister would make the appointment. The chairperson is the only person that is appointed directly by the minister without input from the social partners. And we have 9 commissioners. It's the chairperson, it's 2 representatives from organized business, 2 from organized labor, organized community, and from government. So there's 9 of us. Our term is a 5-year term, and it's due to end of September next year. There was a question also on the average age by racial group. We do not have that. It's not something that is reported, so we cannot give feedback on that. Another question was based on the date and the timeline of projected equality in terms of race and gender, and our answer to that is that there is no specific time because we are fully dependent on employers to do the right thing. But we often talk about what we call a sunset clause, and a sunset clause would be when we believe there is no need for the act. And when we ask the date is, what the date is, we often say that it will be determined by the demographics. It's not a date that we set, but it is a date that will come into being because the EAP has been reached. The question of sector targets, whether they are quotas or targets. Fully, they are not quotas, they are targets. And we say they are not quotas because a quota is inflexible. And in terms of the way we set the sector targets, it is possible that if an employer has not reached the targets that have been set, that they can present justifiable reasons why not. And if those justifiable reasons are accepted, then a certificate would be issued. So a quota is inflexible, and we have put flexibility in the process to ensure that we're compliant with the principles of the ILO. I also just want to very quickly talk to sector targets and how we are going to suggest sector targets. What is the process? We are currently engaging with different sectors, and this process is a consultative process. So we first presenting to a sector what we have seen as a trend and the statistics based on the latest report. And then we look at other realities such as the charters that they may have, and we start engaging on what the barriers are and what would be a realistic target to set. So it's a fully consultative process. How we see it working is that we will have sector targets for 5 years, which will be reviewed after 5 years, and we will set new ones. It's also important to understand that the sector targets, the purpose would be towards working towards the EAP. So ultimately, the EAP is what we seek to achieve. And we are saying because employers are unable to achieve it by themselves, we want to set targets that become milestones towards the achievement of the EAP. And that is the process. We started with engagement with different sectors, and last week we have in principle reached an agreement with one of the sectors, and we're quite happy about this. So it is a process, and we're following the process. Question on foreign nationals. One of the biggest trends that we are seeing is that foreign nationals really sit at top level. You find them mostly in multinationals. Okay? So that's where companies would come and say, we have this person who's been with us long enough, and we're entrusting them with the responsibility to set up office or to run on our behalf. So predominantly it would be a multinational, let's say from the US, they would bring in somebody from there. Feeling about that is that when you do have foreign nationals like that and you believe there aren't any nationals that can do the work, it is important to have a plan of how you're going to transfer the skill and ultimately make sure that, you know, South Africans can occupy those positions. At the lower levels, I would not like to comment too much about foreign nationals because there are other acts that govern, you know, the employability of foreign nationals in the country. For example, Home Affairs are the ones who would issue out the work permits, so it's not within our space. And the other reality is that when you have refugees coming into the country, their refugee status really gives them a right to be employed in the country. The question on the economy and how the economy is busy collapsing and we're not taking that into consideration when we talk about transformation. If you do a trend analysis, you'll realize that even when the economy was good, transformation was not moving fast. So there isn't a direct correlation between a successful economy and transformation. There are other factors as to why transformation is slow. It's not only it's based on the economy. And just talking to the question that should people be dismissed or retrenched to bring in persons from designated groups, the Act is very specific that one would use opportunity, that you would not dismiss people to put in persons from designated groups. Thank you very much. Okay, so the law says that you use opportunity. Now, what we did not share with you is what we call workforce movement, which is statistics that we have. So when employers report, they would report the terminations, So these are the positions that became vacant and that we call an opportunity, because we're saying it is an opportunity for that employer to employ a person from his designated group. And our experience, although the trend is becoming more and more that persons from designated groups are being employed, but generally the trend is that employers still seek white male and white female, you know. So to a large extent, when you look at terminations and you look at appointments, we still see the trend that the persons that are given preference are persons from the white population, especially at senior management. Issues of intersectionality between disability, gender, and race are also very interesting. Preference in terms of disability still given to white individuals and Indian individuals. So the disabled person from a designated group sits right at the back of the queue in terms of being appointed. I've tried to respond to as many of the questions as is possible. Chair, you also spoke to the issue of education. Education is critical, and we recognize and acknowledge that our education system was designed to keep us at the bottom. However, the reality is that when employers bring in people, part of the process, you will remember that the Skills Development Act is a twin act to the Employment Equity Act. It says upskill the people so that they can occupy the position. And in the reporting, we ask employers to report to us their training in as far as it promotes employment equity. And yet again, the trend that we see is that the privileged are still getting more opportunity to be trained. So we see more white people being trained, even though, again, that trend is slowly changing. But up to now, the trend has been that the white people are preferred in terms of training. I've tried to address most of the questions, and I think just going back to the issue of education, our challenge to employers is farm your own timber. If you're looking for managers, because one of the challenges that we're hearing is, yeah, black people are always desperate for money, so if you offer them a little more, they will move as quickly as possible. And, you know, we say create opportunities by making sure that you have a skill pool internally. And you can promote from within. There was a question asked as to what are the reasons why transformation is slow, and I just want to close by talking to that. Research that was done, that was done by the department, as well as sector engagements that we've had with transformation managers as well as CEOs to try and understand why transformation is slow. The responses that we've received, the biggest response is the power dynamic. You know, we've had transformation managers coming in and saying, look, we don't have the power to change. Things are not changing because our employers just remain discriminatory. We sit in an environment where decisions are made outside of us. It's not a strategic, it's not a strategic KPI. The issue of transformation, so it's not pulled through right up to board level where the decision is seen as strategic. It's done there where the manager who deals with employment equity issues is relegated to a corner office and they have very little impact in the organization. And if you look at that, it really talks to a perpetuation of the system as it has been. And this is not my opinion, it is the feedback that we've received from stakeholder engagement with people that are really responsible for transformation in their organization. So the first thing is the power dynamic. The second issue is organizational culture. To a large extent, most organizational cultures are contrary to transformation. It is an environment where you seek people that are familiar to you, you know, that look like you, that act like you, and those are people that you would bring in. And the environment itself remains discriminatory, so we continue to treat people in the same way. For example, you find that communication would be by email, and people at the lowest level don't have access to email. There's not much thought given to the way we do things, our policies, our procedures, so that we can embrace transformation. Indeed, education remains a challenge, but it's not our space, so I would prefer not to comment on that. like to say that we are engaging with the fetus in terms of how we can change that. The question of enforcement also sits with the department, the inspectorate division, and I'm not in a position to talk much about that, except to say that we're working closely with them to ensure that our inspectors are capacitated to look at the right thing when they go into the environment. I'm going to hand over two other things that I forgot to mention. One of the initiatives that we're looking at as a commission is a hotline where we can empower employees to report discrimination, even if it's anonymous, and then we can go in and hand over to the right officials to deal with those issues. We've also planned workshops with persons with disability. We've just received a budget where we are going to engage with the disability sector to try and identify what the barriers are and what we can do to enable employers to reach more persons with disability. Thank you. I'll hand over to you.
Thank you, Jane. There are a few questions in relationship to, and I think in relationship to why don't we have a transversal agreement with employees. The effect is in itself, and the reports and the that companies need to submit is a commitment by themselves. Not by government, that is said by government, commitment by themselves that they will change at this rate. This is what the Employability Act measures. The rate of change where the employees have committed themselves to transformation. And I think that's an important element that we need to raise. That there is no need for a separate agreement, that we need to have a transversal agreement. The agreement is already made by the employers who submit the employment capability report that says that this is how we have transformed in terms of targets that we've set ourselves. And that's an important thing that we need to engage on. So that the notion of separate agreements or MOUs or companies is already encapsulated within the broad underlying principles of the Act, where the Act talks about self-regulatory environment in terms of how the Employment Act is structured. So that fundamental principle will remain. That the Act is premised on a concept of voluntary compliance, where we establish, and when I talk about we, as employers, establish the targets we will meet, and then we report on those targets that we have reached. So that's a fundamental principle, and that principle, even if we take sectoral targets, these are targets that are, that the principle of voluntary compliance will still remain as a fundamental bedrock of the legislation. Secondly, I also need to point out that the notion of consensus when we establish a labor legislation is a principle that has been established in terms of process and procedure and as well as legislation. That will also not. So the Employment Equity Act, and the reason why I raise this one, is the Employment Equity Act, although it is passed by Parliament, is fundamentally based and premised on an agreement between employers, workers, and government in this regard. And I think that's a fundamental principle that we will also not change. I hope that, and I'm going so I'm going to some of the questions and the comments made by Honourable Bargrain in relationship to why employers are not employing. I hope that the notion that employers are not employing people, black people, is not as a fact that they are not productive. I hope that you make that very clear. I think the chairperson is raising what are the factors that impact on transformation in this instance. Honourable Farrell, you asked a question in relation to the date of when. I have just received a message that Cabinet Committee has just agreed that the Employment Act will proceed to Cabinet next week. So as you well know, the process of the deliberations and the process of discussion and parliament will then determine the exact date and implementation of what other factors we need to put in place in order to deal with it. But I've just had the assurance that it will go to cabinet next week. They're going to amend the X Amendment Bill. The question of whether second dimension is going to have negative consequences in relationship to the rate of economic growth that we have, and I think that's a question that Honorable Ricardo has also raised, whether we don't see it as a deterrent in terms of going forward. Well, research has indicated that even if there is economic growth and the Honorable Chairperson and Chairperson has raised, the rate of transformation remains low. Now, I need to juxtapose it with my response with what is international experience in relationship to the rate of transformation we're not doing well, we're not doing that bad in relationship to comparable countries across the world. But Africa, rate of transformation is not that low, but it is slow in the context of South Africa. Yeah. It is slow in the context of our transformation agenda in the country, and I think that is an important fact that we need to acknowledge. And I haven't heard around the table that we are opposed to transformation in the country. I think it's just the rate of transformation and possibly the time and space for that transformation that needs to happen. There's questions around whether we should have more free market principles apply to the labour market as opposed to have a more restrictive regulatory environment. The question that we need to ask is, effectively, do we have a restrictive labour environment? The answer to that question can be found in a number of research that is done by both the IMF as well as the World Bank that says that the fundamentals of our labour legislation is fine. There's nothing wrong with the fundamentals of our legislation. There's nothing that says that our legislation is environment. In fact, the major deterrent for foreign direct investment is not labour legislation. It is other factors. It is factors, for example, around security. Plays a major impact on and we're dealing with those issues in a broader context. And Chair, perhaps one of the things that we would want to do as a department is at some point bring to this committee our discussions around the job summit and where we are and what are the issues that we're facing around the job summit, so that we have a sense of what it is that we're doing in order to address some of the barriers to create employment and some of the barriers for economic growth that we have in relationship to employment. And that's a commitment, if the committee finds it favorable, that we would want to bring that to the committee. There are questions in relationship to detail around the enforcement and what the factors are in relationship to the inspectors and the increase in inspectors. Chair, unfortunately, as we said here, we don't have the detail, and we'll undertake, and it's because we are the policy section primarily, and the enforcement section, we undertake that we will provide that information in writing to the committee as a matter of urgency. So there was a question on whether the timeline that is set up in the presentation scope 10. As I've indicated, it will be addressed in relationship to the cabinet process, the parliamentary process, and it will have an impact on when and what at what time certain elements of these processes are brought into play. So we will give an update as we go along. Especially after the cabinet meeting in next week, so that you have a sense of where we are in relationship to that. Chair, there's also information required in terms of, first, there was the issue on disability, and whether it can be disaggregated in terms of race and gender, and we don't have that information at our disposal now, but we will provide that information together with all of the other commitments that we've made. Chair, I think we've responded to all of the questions that have been said. There's just one question, and I apologize. It's the issue of foreign nationals. And I think we need to have a more broader response in relationship to foreign nationals than where they're located. Chair, we are signatory as South Africa. We are signatory to the AU agreement on the free movement of goods, services, and people. And therefore, let me rephrase that. The government, unfortunately, as a result of it being a signatory to this protocol, has no obligation, and there's no commitment, and there's no intention that we want to stop an effect on the free movement of people. What we need to be mindful of is the fact that in some of these instances, there's a total displacement of South African labor in some of the categories of employment that we have. If you look at, for example, at the hospitality trade, the majority of waiters and waitresses and waiters are not South African. Yeah. And we need to be able to have an input, and the department has been very clear in terms of that, and this will come to this commission, committee as well, that we need to have South African employment policies that we put on the table. We also need to put on the table, as part of the South African employment policy, we need to put on the table South Africa labor migration policy on the table, so that we can, for example, say, in these sectors, we will prioritize South African workers. In these sectors, we won't issue work permits because of the fact that our people are not employed, and we need to do. But that is the domain and the remit of that South African employment policy and of South African labor immigration policy that will come to this committee as a matter of course. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to check with the commissioners if there's any question that I've left out or that they'd like to respond. Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to portfolio committee members. While I'm the commissioner, I'm also the acting director general in the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. I would like to indicate that since the pronouncement of the National Macro Organization, the NMOC process, of where departments were merged, the disability sector, the policy department, has been brought to the Department of Women. Hence, we are now Women, Youth and Persons with Disability. And we have managed to elevate key issues into the MTSF, the Medium-Term Strategic Framework, over the five-year period, particularly elevating the issues that were raised around attainment of the target for persons with disabilities in the workplace. Our role is that of playing an advocacy role as well, and making sure that the department mainstreams these issues. And in this instance, we are lobbying the Department of Public Service and Administration, as well as the Department of Labor, to collectively address the whole issue of a strategy on improving employment of persons with disability in the workplace. But I would like to also emphasize that it shouldn't be about fear. It should be about employer understanding that it is their responsibility to provide reasonable accommodation to persons with disability, including the provision of assistive devices. Even if it means part of the reasonable accommodation is employing an assistant for that person, then that should be the case. Fears of a person falling at work and all of that can be addressed in that manner. As I conclude, Chair, this is a month, the disability month, that commenced from the 3rd of November to the 3rd of December. And during this period, we've launched key messages. There's a key message that I would like to elevate. It says, my disability is your inability to understand my needs. Mm-hmm. What I need in the work environment and all of that. And we will popularize those key messages, because they will serve as a mechanism to reach out to all the sectors that ought to abide by the regulations that govern all these sectors. But at this point in time, we will continue to pursue and play that advocacy role to ensure that these issues are addressed across the board. Thank you.
Chair, I think the point has been made, but I think we just need to highlight it again, is that it is also the intention of the Commission to recommend that South Africa ratify the International Labour Organization Convention of 2019, 109, in terms of addressing, eliminating harassment and violence in the world of work. It is an opportunity for South Africa to address our current 2005 code. You would know that we are dealing with four different conflicting sexual harassment definitions, and the test for what harassment is in its broadest sense, the test in sexual harassment and the elements and the definitions in its broadest sense is in need of clarification. And we are also recommending a broader training of CCMA commissioners in understanding the application and judges. So we are working at developing that code in its broader spectrum for public comment, and that is one of the important aspects of the way forward we just needed to stress. Thank you.
Sorry, please go ahead. Commissioner Julie. My apologies.
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, just like Commissioner Shabalala has indicated, I'm also on the side of government, representing government on the commission, and my other cap is that I'm the BBBE commissioner. So, and I think it is important to indicate that the foundation for the employment equity legislation, as well as the BBBE legislation, is our constitution. The preamble of our constitution is very clear about where the disparities are. And they were race-based, they were gender-based, and the redress mechanisms that are in place are to achieve that balance. We need to rebalance, and it is important that as we look at it, and as we engage all the social partners, as we engage government, as we engage business, it's not about fighting. It's about working together to achieve the objectives that this legislation was intended for, and that intention is to achieve inclusivity of our economy. Our economy cannot continue to exclude the majority of this country. So one of the things that was mentioned is that economic growth is important, but we have been told that we are the most unequal society in the world, and that for as long as we look like that, our economy is not going to grow at the rate that we want. So it is important that we bear in mind, and that it should not be different groups pushing in different directions, but to find a way of how do we work together to achieve what is intended. And at that point, then we can start talking about the sunset clause, because the pace with which we achieve the redress is the pace that's going to determine when that sunset clause is going to be. So it is important that we coordinate and work together. The last thing, Chair, that I wanted to just say is that around the issue of how we're going to ensure that the certificates of compliance are going to be authentic, that is going to be the responsibility as well of the people that receive them to also test the authenticity on an ongoing basis, because it's an enforcement issue. We know that people, even if the IDs are issued by the Department of Home Affairs, people still fake IDs, so it is a responsibility continuously to test documents that we receive as government procurement officials, as government institutions, to make sure that they are authentic. BBBE certificates are faked every day, but that's pure criminality. So even in this case, I think our inspectors will also be able to assist in randomly dealing with some of those issues, but also the reporting mechanisms for some of those certificates if they are picked up. But I just want to say, Chair, that I think all of this is only going to achieve if we receive cooperation from all the parties that should make this happen. and business is a critical part to it.
Just one more. I'm going to ask the secretary to respond to it.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. There was an issue on how are we going to ensure compliance on companies that do not necessarily need a certificate of compliance to do business with government. It is important to highlight that the enforcement is actually two-faced. If you don't need a certificate to do business with government, you're still required by law to transform, and there are penalties built in the Employment Equity Act under Schedule 1 that failure to implement employment equity or implement the targets that have been regulated for that particular sector by the minister, and you fail to meet those targets, it means you have failed to implement an equity plan to transform your organization. Therefore, the Director General has been given power to actually refer those non-compliant companies to the Labour Court for a penalty not less than 1.5 million and 2% of the turnover. And if it's a repeated offense, it actually escalates. Therefore, there is no way out. People always say, I don't need the certificate, I don't do business with government. However, we are going to be caught out on the failure to implement the requirements of the law to meet the objectives. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, those are the responses. First round, Sarah Branch, Honourable Baker, and Honourable Member.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. I just want to make the point that people are employing to have productivity. We need to uplift productivity. It's not race-based at all, so I think Mr. Seafield put that wrong. It's productivity, and everyone wants productivity as best they can. I haven't had an answer if, in fact, you agree that we should follow the demographics of the province, not of the country. And you can answer me on that, because it appears the government doesn't seem to agree on the province, but they say country, and I'd like to have your comment on that. You spoke about discrimination, and again, we have a lot of law. If there is any discrimination, we've got the CCMA, bargaining councils, labor court, we've got the whole ambit of the law, and somehow these cases should be taken there. We don't need more legislation for it. There's very perfect legislation. I know I've been involved in many of those cases, and they're absolutely fine. The law's good, and you can actually uphold the discrimination very easily. Also, another thing, you keep talking about recruitment policies and all that, so that's all big business. Small business don't have that. Don't really have recruitment policies. It's education. And I want to know how you're rolling out education to small business. Another thing is, we all deal with trade unions every day, and I've never seen at any of the negotiations, the annual wage negotiations, demands for demographics. I've never seen that, ever, in 35 years. And one would expect that the unions would also be at the forefront of wanting some sort of demographic change. And somehow they're not, and are you running out of sort of training programs for the trade unions? I'm very pleased to hear about the budget, the new budget for the disability sector. I'd like to know more about it. I'm very involved in the disability sector. They somehow feel that they've been left out in its entirety. So I'd like to hear more about it and see where we can go. With regard to foreign nationals, and I'm running out of time, Madam Chair, but with regard to foreign nationals, I know that our president is on the cusp of signing with AU. We are rolling out more and more regulations and agreement with the AU. And if that's the case, it means that there'll be free flow of people across Africa. And how are we going to somehow look at that? If a person has free flow, they won't need a work permit then. They'll just like you did in the EU. How are we going to somehow look at that? And in terms of fear with disability, final answer, if you're looking for an answer on that, that is still the issue. I know that it shouldn't be an issue. but it is an issue. People are fearful of disability, and they need somehow to be, again, training or something, some sort of rollout. And I see your commission as being at the forefront of future training, future education in that. So thank you for allowing me a second bite.
One moment, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Well, let me thank the Commission for the responses, which really were helpful. Just one point, Chair, that I want to make a follow-up on is with regard to the question on geographical location or on the steps around foreign nationals. The issue here, maybe I just to explain why I raised that question. The issue here, perhaps we need to take into account that recently you had a problem of drugs being banned on the entry, and the major problem there has been what you have alluded to, that is of the employment of truck drivers in the transport industry. And those truck drivers in the main are not necessarily immigrants. Yeah. They are in fact taken across the border on the basis of cheap labor, and they displace South African labor. Yeah. That is the source of the conflict. That's one side of it. And then if you come to this part of South Africa, Western Cape, you find in the hospitality industry that you have a large concentration of workers in the hospitality who are, again, foreign nationals. I've been trying just to get in the name of the head. There's a labor apartheid-era legislation that allows the industry itself to go and take people outside, yeah, and get them and employ them. Yeah. As a result, you can even take a walk around areas in the hospitality industry, you'll find that there's a high concentration of foreign nationals working in the hospitality industry, yeah, restaurants and so on, yeah, in the US area. So my question was around that, was whether, for instance, when you go into that provincial spread, whether, for instance, you've taken into account that notwithstanding what the commissioner there, the one who spoke after your chair, I fully agree with all the points that he has raised. They are perfectly correct, and that's not where we are. You know, the point that we're trying to come to, because currently this committee and other committees are also sitting considering what interventions can be made to deal with issues that have given rise to the unfortunate incidents that have just taken place. So my question was coming from that context that other than just political or economic conditions that have necessitated movement of people, but there are these deliberate steps that have resulted, and unfortunately the consequences have not been good for both the country, the continent, and everyone. Yeah. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. For me, that's what is interesting, that why I'm going to ask the question, whether it is your responsibility. The issue of, which is the first time that I hear about it, that if I don't say, I can't say, I can't talk, I will be classified as, I will be within the category of I. Now the question is, do you have an outreach program of encouraging? Because maybe is it also about stigma, maybe, at the workplace? But how do you have a program that is it your responsibility, or is it, I'm happy that the Department of Women, People with Disability, so that's where my question is. It's quite a very interesting thing. I never thought about it. That you must not just assume it must be a person it reminds me of somebody who was deployed in my office. And she came and said, I want to tell you that I'm disabled because I've got this condition. And it was just that time now I hear what you're saying, that it also depends on a person. Okay, I think those are the few comments and questions for this round. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the issue of declaring disability. Mm-hmm. It is true that not all disabilities are visible. And therefore, the issue of having people declare their disability is important. When we were interacting with the transport sector, they were saying to us, no, we don't want to employ persons with disability. I mean, some of them don't have hands, and therefore they can't drive. And clearly, you begin to realize that people have very set ideas of what disability is. And there's a lot of education that still needs to happen. So basically, in the Employment Equity Act, the definition of a disability is around the statement that Commissioner Shabalala made, that an environment that is not enabling for me to perform my duty, where there are certain barriers that make it difficult for me. So looking at a person with depression, for example, some of them would indicate that because of 1, 2, 3, it becomes difficult for me to be fully functional, and therefore it is declared as a disability. Stereotypes are a big issue. And in some of the cases where we have engaged with associations of disability and the disability sector, we've heard people saying, we will not declare a disability because the minute you declare, there are certain stereotypes that are attached, and immediately your chances of being promoted or given opportunity are limited. I also want to indicate to the team and that we do have a commissioner who focuses on issues of disability. Commissioner Sene is hard of hearing, and so he is very passionate on these issues, and a lot of the time we take a cue for him. He was very instrumental in getting us to talk to the department in giving us a budget, and that's why we are at a place where we'll be engaging with the disability sector to identify what are some of the real problems, and based on that we will be able to advise the minister on how we can deal with issues of disability. Talking to the EAP, remember that in terms of the Act, we don't only look at the national EAP, we also look at the provincial EAP. So employers are given the flexibility to deal with national EAP. If I look at this in the report itself, there is an indication of what the EAP should look like or what it looks like per province. And it enables employers to benchmark themselves against the regional EAPs. So for example, in KZN, you would find that there's a density of the Indian population, and therefore the EAP would be more skewed towards them. Western Cape, on the other hand, there is a density of the colored population, and we expected the skew to be there. But interestingly, the skew is more towards the white population in the Western Cape. So those are the things that we are putting out there. All we do is that we take the mirror and we put it out there and say, look at yourself. But those regional statistics are there. We also want, in terms of recruitment policies, that a small business should have them. The department does, on an annual basis, have roadshows. And at these roadshows, we encourage employers to attend. And a lot of education happens at this stage, where we talk to reporting, we talk to what is in the pipeline, how employers should respond to this. But it's precisely for the fact that small businesses do not have these policies that we experience the level of transformation that we have. Because what then happens is that an owner just feels, this is my business, I'll do as I like and employ whoever I wish. And that is why we have to address it. I also need to state that South Africa is unique in terms of affirmative action. It is the only country that is employing affirmative action to redress the majority as opposed to the minority. In all other places where affirmative action is a reality, it's addressing issues of minority. In South Africa, we are addressing issues of majority, and there is just no way that we can ignore this reality. It has to be done. If we don't, we're going to find ourselves in a situation where we have undesirable consequences like we had in the transport sector. Just some experience and feedback that we've received around issues of drivers of trucks. Employers are putting in place very stringent requirements that make it difficult for South Africans to apply for those positions. So they will say something like, we need people who will be out of the country for 3 weeks. You know? You are going to be, for 3 weeks, you're going to be based in Zambia. So who's going to find the most comfort in that kind of role? Obviously somebody from Zambia. And those are, when I talk about power dynamics and how you cannot legislate power dynamics, that's exactly what I'm talking to. That you put in place legislation and you expect in good faith that employers will deal with those things in good faith. We also know that in the hospitality industry, employers in our sector engagements have said to us, we do not want to employ South Africans. They're difficult. They know their rights. If you employ foreigners, they're desperate for a job, so they'll take anything and then live with any condition that you give them. Even if you don't pay them a salary and you expect them to live on tips, they will do it because they're desperate. And that is that exploitation that we're dealing with. And in that process, we're also protecting the rights of foreign nationals. Just remember that once a person is in a job, they're entitled to be protected by the legislation of a country. So even if you have a waitress that is foreign, the minute they're employed, they're entitled to be protected by even the laws of our country. The budget of the disability sector is a budget, as I said already, that seeks to engage at provincial level with the different bodies, and we believe that it will cover that. And as part of that, we will look at initiatives to educate employers. You know, what information are we receiving? What are the real issues around employment? And how do we go out to address them in terms of dealing with them? I believe I've dealt with all the issues, unless, Commissioner, there is anything that I've missed that you'd like to talk to. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chair and Commissioner. I was just saying to the comments at the time, my report is still here. When responses are given, SABC is nowhere to be found. Because these responses are responses that are not only for ourselves, are responses that even the society at large is to be aware that there is this commission, maybe a commission that is known by the few. So I will raise it. I'm not even kind. I picked that because truly and honestly speaking, as I said initially, some of the, you are not here just to make us aware, but to empower ourselves. And our questions to you are also questions that are to empower you, but also pick up what our leadership is about acknowledging, yeah, where you have got some limitations and challenges. But together, we really have a challenge. And I don't think it's going to be the last time that we call you in this tent at this committee, because our country is in a serious challenge of unemployment, but we would like commissions, entities like yourselves, that are to say, as you are dealing with research, maybe you will tell us which is very relevant, but to say that, in fact, it is, I see that you have put here sectors, which is fine. But even in government, we would like to know, in that percentage, which departments are lagging behind. even in big business, we would really appreciate that. And around the issue of foreign nationals, I think he has reminded me, we were told by the department one time that there is that act, and I think we've got a responsibility. It's an act that was long before 1994. So as we are moving forward, we've got that responsibility. The high-level panel commission did indicate that there are laws and regulations that as Parliament we are to look into them. At times we must not ask you questions. We must ask ourselves, what then are we to do about this in ensuring so that when we conduct oversight, we are able to say, but this is to be done in terms of you are leaving behind as the department. Again, this department and this ministry is to create enabling environment. And in so doing, I don't think you are to handle us or whoever, even us as the committee, with kitty gloves. We won't handle you with kitty gloves ourselves. If at times you are not happy with him that the information that you are giving us is more, we say, I go back, come back when you think you are to give us any information that is important, because you are right. This subject of transformation is not about who is eloquent, who is more politic. In my other life, I always say Marxism is not about speaking high-powered concept. It's about telling people to say, we are here to assist you to do your work. We are not here, you are to change. Ours is to create an environment which is going to enable you to be able, because otherwise we will create a dependency syndrome. We'll create people who think that there's nothing that I can do. There are these people that will do A, B, C, D. In terms of people with disability, it's quite a very sore point in our country. There are sectors that are just, I'm sitting here, I'm saying to myself, I'm a health worker. I don't remember seeing a nurse on a wheelchair or a doctor on a wheelchair. I don't know with education, but I'm just the sector that I when maybe in law, advocate Lahutsi will know Dr. Gavane is in the, has been in the administration space. They will know. But there are sectors where you just take one step back and say, I go. Even in trade unions, Honorable Not said, I don't remember. Maybe there are a few. So we are here to unpack and open up all the challenges that we are. The only sector that I know is quite a thorny area, motive, the farming community. Because in agriculture we have to unpack the farming there, because it's my farm. And do as I please. In terms of foreign nationals, in terms of people with disability, and all those. So we are calling you so that we are then able to open our eyes. That's why I'm saying it's not going to be not the last time. Come 2020, because every time you issue a statement on your research or whatever, together with SSA, we are always curious to see what exactly is happening, because we can't be sitting here for the whole 5 years, and when we leave, we don't see any change, even if it's minimal. But we must be able to say, when we met Employment Equity Commissioners. It is the day that we then became more empowered. It is then a day that made us to be able to challenge government, to challenge business, and to challenge labor and NGOs for that matter. What are NGOs doing if that draft that you gave us, what is it if they are interested in ensuring that government is being accused? We are being accused as the African National Congress in all corners, but as the president said in SONA, in all the statements that are being made, it is to ensure that it's not about the political party that he leads, but it's about people of South Africa. And this committee, among other things, is to assist government, led by the president, to achieve that for the benefit of them. And if we have made you uncomfortable, partner, if maybe by responses or comments from members, other members felt uncomfortable, well, my father said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. that's politics. But it's obviously we are all here for the benefit, but also being driven by our political and by our ideology and our feeling from our different organizations, political organizations, but at the center of all that is about people of South Africa. So we thank you very much. We will appreciate DDG. If you can please submit that information to us, you know the process. And I think, honorable members, with this, we want to thank them very much, and we are very happy and proud that while you have got a home that is warm, is because you have got a wife. Yes. Meaning that women can lead. Thank you very much. We can remember as we will allow them to just take a stretch as you until we meet again. You are coming back in 2021.
Thank you very much, Kate.